What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. We're live on Facebook. Maybe you're listening later. Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast, it's all good. And we have a packed show for you tonight with some amazing guests. Justin, before we get into it real quick, you haven't been here a couple of weeks.
Hey, welcome back. Thanks for remembering you do a show.
No, it's great. I remember the whole time I was quietly podcasting to my family, having opinions, and they respect my opinion as much as you guys do. So that was perfect. But I was at Disney World and really took it in for a week.
Because you won the Super Bowl, so you went to Disney World.
A lot of those, the Kansas City Chiefs went to Disneyland, but we were at the Magic Kingdom the day they were like, we're at Disney World. I was like, because we didn't see them.
Just apropos of the show, did you go to Star Wars Land? Did you do anything like nerdy or comic booky there?
Well, let me tell you, the Guardians ride is, that's a very comic book club thing to do. Because Goofy's sort of the Nat Towson of the Magic Kingdom.
Agreed.
The Guardians of the Galaxy ride is awesome. Truly, like, worth going to. Scared my daughter, my six-year-old daughter. But I enjoyed it, for sure. I didn't realize that young kids could go on those rides. You have to be, like, 40 inches tall for most rides. So my four-year-old daughter went on the Tower of Terror and loved it.
Wow.
She said her quote coming off it was like falling down on the playground, but I didn't have to hurt my knee. I was like, wow. Good philosophy.
Wow, that's awesome. So you're going to take her on a roller coaster tour of the United States now, right?
I think I have to. It's her thing. On the Star Wars tip, everyone talks about Rise of the Resistance. I actually thought the Smuggler's Run ride was my favorite of the two featured
controversial
rides. I know, controversial take, but you get to fly in the Millennium Falcon and you get to actually pilot it. So that was exciting. Whoa.
Awesome. Well, it's good to have you back. Very excited to have you here. And I'm also excited about the guests that we have on the show. Later on, we're going to have Jamie Rotante and McCall Osto are going to be here to talk about some awesome Archie comic stuff. But first, let's talk about a book that is on Zoop right now and is awesome and wild. Zoop, there it is. Let's bring in Claire Napier. Hello, Claire.
Hey.
How are you?
Welcome.
So the Magic Necklace on Zoop right now. Zoop, for frequent listeners of the show, they know this, but it's a crowdfunding platform. It's very heavily curated. And of course, they curated it with your book, which is a cool book.
Great.
It's up right now and you are pretty close. I'm just looking at it right now. It's 2,395 out of 3,000. There's 16 days left. Hopefully we can give it the patent Comic Book Club bump.
Yeah, raise it up a little bit for you.
See what happens. But talk about this book. This is a wild mix of romance and horror that went in directions I completely was not expecting. What was the inspiration behind the book? And if you could give the audience just like a little pitch, whatever you feel comfortable sharing about the plot.
Yeah, the oldest, it all happened to me. This is a true story.
I knew it.
it's just I made it up, you know. It's a hard question to answer because it gets hard to remember once you're doing it, once you've finished. Like history rewrites itself and all you can remember is here's the thing. And I've already forgotten the question. I'm sorry. It's midnight.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Okay.
It's where you are.
Well, thank you for coming on late.
Yeah, the pitch of the book, which, I mean, I'm happy to read it off the back cover if that is an easier way to do it.
That would be perfect.
Morgan Le Fay's necklace grants immunity from danger to those who wear it. 3 days ago, Ann Rita bought it. 2 days ago, something happened. Yesterday, Ann Rita had a thought. Today, she'll have a man. Which I thought that was, I love the sort of like haiku, like diminishing word count of that. But I didn't read that until the end. And I actually, the easing into the story and sort of the magic part of it, I thought was so great. But my real question is about the art style here, which is sort of, it reminds me of like pen ink, and you, pink and black are sort of the color choices here. What brought you there?
Well, it is pen ink. So good eye.
Nailed it. I'm a reporter.
I have a pink pen. I have a black pen. my next book, the one I'm doing now, I've got a green pen. It's sort of organic, an organic process. What do I have? What can I put towards the idea? Like, when I edit people and teams, I'm very big on resources. What kind of resources can you provide your collaborators with? What kind of resources can you build for yourself before you start working? And often that means like thinking up character background that won't ever make it into the book, or thinking up like making sure if you're a writer who's saying to your artist that you're working with, like this takes place in a high school auditorium. If you're an American writer, which often they are, and you're working with a non-American artist, which often they are, the artist doesn't know what a high school auditorium looks like. Like, they can kind of guess, and they can maybe put on a movie and copy that, but that's a lot of work to do. So I'm very big on providing upfront and making sure the process is as easy as it can be. And that's because that's what I find works for me. If it's hard, it doesn't get done. So I like to do what I can with what I have, because doing what I can with what I don't have means that I can't do anything. So having a pink pen, because I didn't buy it for the project. I just had it because I like colorful ink. Like, it's nice. It's right. Like a style thing, you know, like, I don't know if you had this experience in school, but when you are first allowed to use an ink pen in primary school, like, you move up from pencil. in my day, as we say when we're old, it was exciting. We would use a cartridge pen with like little ink cartridges, and the most glamorous, exciting thing you could possibly do was have a different colored ink cartridge, because the norm was blue, like royal blue, like blue ink, occasionally black if you were being daring. But sometimes we would get a different colored ink cartridge, and it wasn't even about using it. It was just like having the cartridge itself. It was so like, because it was different and because it was pretty, like the object was exciting. And then if you did actually go so far as to use it, that was like showing off your riches by eating gold or something. So I kept that like enjoyment and almost hedonistic thrill of using like a colorful ink, and it just appeals to me. So I happened to buy this pink pen in WH Smith one time, and then when I came to want to actually draw this story, I thought, what's going to make me the happiest, what's going to feel the best to use while I'm doing that, how is the experience going to be the best it can be? Because if the experience is the best it can be, then I know I'll keep going. And the answer was, use this pink pen. So I did.
Well, to talk about the other part, sorry to interrupt, Justin, but opposite from the pink pen, you've got through the blacks in particular, and we're looking at some of the pages here on the live stream for anybody listening, you have this sort of, I don't know, it's sort of like old newsprint meets pointillist style that you're going with. Is that something that was very specific to this book? Is that something that your style in general, and how do you achieve that?
Yeah, I think it is specific to this book, although I am also going to use it continually going on. It's not so much that it's specific to the book as it's specific to the subject. Like horror romance and the intensity of experience and like the shock of being faced with someone who is overacting or like coming on to you. It's a lot. And the vision gets hazy. Things feel speckled. And I think that screen tone gets that across really well. And like the hazy impressionistic pointillism, the idea of being indirect in order to achieve a specific image is appealing to me and also thematic, I think.
Well, and let me say on that, I feel like it's that intersection. Like, I feel like this story could equally have been scribbled on a bar napkin of someone watching this happen or on someone's notebook, like you're saying, with a grade school pen. The pen I imagined was the one that I saw when I was a kid, where you could flick between different colored ink, and it precious. My daughter just got one of those, and she holds it like it is the holy grail. She loves it so much. And so that intersection, I thought, just from an art choice, tells us so much about the tone of it and gets us sort of in the head of a character that isn't telling us what's happening without revealing the secrets. And I was so impressed by that, to ride with a character tonally, but then get to enjoy the reveals without them feeling like they are being withheld from us for too long.
Thank you.
Well, what was that? I'm curious to follow up on what Justin's saying. As a writer, were there points during the process where you wanted to get that information out there sooner, but you were like, no, 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 hold on to it, hold on to it?
Kind of. I always, it's for me, the can't waitness is more wrapped up in like having it finished. Like I knew where all the information needed to be, like how the parts worked together and needed to, like the order in which they needed to come. But I it's frustrating to have to wait to draw it all. It comes together usually quite well, like the in terms of like revelations, because I do tend to find myself making stories in which things aren't as they seem or whatever, just because it gives me plenty to keep in mind, I guess. Like having a lot of strings to hold on to means that I'm always having to hold on to them, so I don't get bored. I've forgotten what I was saying.
No, listen, I don't want to keep you too late, because like you said, it's very late where you are, but you do have this Zoop campaign that's up, as we mentioned, for the next 16 days as we're taping. If people go there, what can they check out? What can they expect from the campaign?
Well, they can get the comic. There's PDF and print tiers. There's a book plate and a bundle and a print and a t-shirt. But my favorite tier is that there's an audio short, which I wrote like prose. And then my friend, who's a professional erotic voice actress, has recorded. It's a monologue from the perspective of Morgan Le Fay, like watching the events prior to the comic, from her tower outside of time, because I do like Arthurian razzle dazzle, and I do. I wanted to be able to provide like an addition, like an extra, like people do for crowdfunding campaigns. Yeah. But the things that people normally offer, I can't do them. Like I can't offer commissions because I will forget that I'm supposed to do them. So I had to cast around for something that felt authentic and non obligatory, and offering a parallel story that it's not necessary in the least. Like it doesn't explain anything that's not explained in the comic. But it, I guess there's an element of feminine solidarity to it. Because having a witch's necklace is one thing, but having the witch approve of what you do with it is another. Like that it's better.
Well, and let me say, it's to have that as a tier for someone who would sign up for that before they've read the book, like, having read it, I want to hear that now. Like, I want to hear that. Like, you need an option for me to buy in now to hear that. Because that to me is the perfect, like I mean, I haven't heard it, but the perfect epilogue to the story, which, like, leaves you. I mean, it's very sexual. I think we sort of touch on it a little bit. But after it's finished, you're left with the reality. Like when we as people have sex in whatever way that we do it, afterward you're like, okay, now I got to go back to everything else in my relationship or life or whatever. And I love the idea that the book ends there, but to have an outside eye on it, almost being like, well, that was a mistake, or great work, you did the right thing.
Well,
there.
This,
like,
is not
so
to interrupt,
cool.
But this is Justin. This is the same way. Whenever you have sex, I call you up to comment on it, right?
And honestly, like, I don't know if I don't have a magic necklace. I don't know how you're in on me doing this, but I guess when you do a podcast for so long,
exactly,
you
just
get
know
in on the good stuff. Yeah,
I got my tingle going on there. Let's not follow this road too
me
far.
Me too.
Claire, sorry about the detour at the end there. The book is great. I'm very excited for you. I'm very excited for the Zoop. Everybody should check it out. Everybody should support it. And that bonus, like we've been talking about, sounds really awesome. So thank you for staying on late to talk.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Get some sleep. Love the book. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
Glad to have been there.
All right. There we go. Claire Napier. The book is called The Magic Necklace, and it is up on Zoop right now. And like we talked about, very cool. Also, like Justin was getting at the end there, very adult. This is not a story for kids. If you're like,
yeah, it shouldn't read this on the subway or
nope. But yeah, if your kids like, you know, Arthurian tales or something, don't give it to your kids.
There's a subway car in New York anyway at the back where you can just read whatever you want.
Oh, is that the
really?
Curtains?
That's yeah, the it's the curtains. Right? Everyone's like being car. A little fun. Yeah, it's fun. Everyone's having fun. Everyone's doing what they want.
Yeah, it's out of service this weekend, though, and that's very annoying.
I know, you'd think. And Pete, I know New York's changed a little bit since you were here.
So yeah, I guess so. The old curtain car was
you,
not
you
something
gotta
I was
used to. You got to come back for the private pervert car. It's where I find out constantly.
Pete's in Baltimore now. There you just cover yourself with crabs and go to town.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what you do. You just ride crabs to work.
Well, we've got far afield. Why don't we bring in our next guests? They're the folks behind Betty the Final Girl from Archie Comics, which is another wild horror ride. McCall Osto and Jamie Rotante. Hello.
Hey, welcome.
Hello.
Wow. Oh, I like this arrangement of this is new. We haven't had five people on the screen at the same time. Thank you so much. It's so good to see both of you here again. The book is great. It's out on stands now, I believe. Came out last week, if that's correct. So everybody can go and pick it up, and we'll talk about it in a second. But before we get into it, I wanted to present you both with something. So every week we have a professional chef, and this is true, named Stray Bullet, Brett Macris. Yes, straight boys, who either curates or designs a drink for us. And sometimes he's particularly inspired to create a drink based on the guest. And this time, that's exactly what he did. I think this has come up super tiny in the stream. So I'm sorry about it. But he created a drink called the Dark Betty that we made. It's a little bit Riverdale tied. As I think both of you know, we do a Riverdale podcast as well. And we talk about Dark Betty all the time. But of course, Betty does go very dark in The Final Girl as well. So for anybody listening, this is bourbon, grapefruit juice, lime juice, demerara syrup. I always say that long. Peychaud's bitters, a little splash of red wine for the blood on the top, and a lime peel. And it's delicious. Justin, you made one, right?
Oh, yeah. I love this drink. It's one of the best blends of the drinks that we've had on the show. Ooh. And truly the blood red color of it is perfect.
It's creepy.
Hopefully Betty would approve. I guess we'll have to see. There you go. Inspired by the book. So let's talk about the book. So this is like a lot of the horror one shots that have been coming out from Archie Comics lately. You have a framing device, and then you have three short tales that are set in different aspects of the Archie Comics universe. Jamie, I would go to you first, but McCall, I think you sort of spurred on this idea. Is that correct?
I mean, that's what Jamie says. That's what I'm told. And apparently my daughter is very distressed that it hasn't been mentioned again since this one print interview I gave, that in fact, we share a Kindle account, and I don't, she's 11 now, and I don't monitor her reading very much, only because when I was her age, I read a lot of Stephen King, and look how, you know, well-adjusted I am. So I figured these things self-select, but we were on vacation last winter, and she told me she was reading The Final Girl Support Group, and I was like, but rather than tell her not to, I said, okay, I'll read it at the same time so we can just sort of, you know, be in sync, because I'd been meaning to read it and loved it. And as I was sitting on the beach reading it side by side with her and discussing it with her, I had like this moment, because Jamie and I had been talking forever about like, oh, we want to do something with Betty. And I thought, well, she would be so good as the final girl. So it just clicked. And I sent her, it wasn't even a pitch. It was like one crazy person's sentence, just like, what do you think? And she wrote back, oh, I just finished reading The Final Girl Support Group. And I was like, oh, me too. So then it just felt
hilarious,
incredibly faded. But it did all spawn, you know, most proximally from my daughter. And she was very distressed not to get credit for that. So
well, nice that you're giving her credit. Finally.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Jamie, over to you. Like I said, this has been a series of one horror one-shots, usually under, I think, the Chilling Adventures banner. What spurred this on, and what made Betty the Final Girl the perfect current this past week iteration of that?
So we started doing these anthology one-shots back at the end of 2021. The first one we did was the Chilling Adventures in Sorcery. And what spurred that was basically, for God, the longest time, I was like, I would just love to have a kind of Tales from the Crypt, Elvira-esque, you know, character hosting all of these short stories. So that way you can use a lot of different characters, you can tell a bunch of different stories. And we had so much fun doing that one that we just kind of wanted to keep doing them. So each one kind of takes on a little bit of a different format. Sometimes there's a host, sometimes it's just three stories independently. And in the case of Betty the Final Girl, and I believe this is the second time McColl has actually written one like this, the first time being October's Fear the Funhouse, there's a thread that kind of ties all the stories together. And just like McColl said, when she emailed me that idea, it was right at the time I had finished reading The Final Girl Support Group. So it was just like, all right, this must be kismet. Like, this has to happen now. And I feel like of all the characters, Betty kind of gets put through the paces a lot. But she's always just emerges so resilient, and like she's always like changed a little bit with each one that you can kind of throw her into any of these, and she's always so fascinating to watch as this sort of kind of like a badass main character. Frank Thierry did it a lot in Jughead the Hunger, where like Betty really shone as like this, you know, very determined, very violent werewolf hunter, and that really helped to like sort of set the template for like, hey, how far can we take Betty, you know, and everything that was done in Riverdale with Dark Betty. It's just like, all right, she's kind of our horror hero in a lot of ways. So
she's resourceful and like pragmatic, you know.
Yeah. And she's so unassuming at the start. You're like, oh, she's nice. And then she emerged, which is great. What I was going to say is I feel like it would have been easy to just be like, let's do a bunch of Riverdale style comics just to touch on the darker tones of that. But what I love about the books you're releasing, this one especially, like it's specific to horror, and there are different tones across the board. It's not just like being like Riverdale, but comics. It is taking the genre really seriously. And so the variety of different stories just in this book alone, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, especially the second story with all the twists and turns. I had to read it twice and like just checking people's shirts, like who was who, because it was such a fun kind of like, wait a second, what? Reveal.
Yeah, it was. We always have a lot of fun putting these together, because to touch on what Justin said, we really love to explore all the different subgenres just within horror, because you can do so much with it. You can do psychological, you can do kind of campy, you can do fun. In this case, you can do slasher. And we usually have some reference points for like different movies sometimes. So in here, we had a little bit of My Bloody Valentine. Obviously When a Stranger Calls, Scream kind of permeates throughout just because it's a Final Girl book, but we draw tons of influences across all different genres in horror.
Well, this is sort of a double question for both of you, but Jamie, when you are crafting a book like this, when you're putting together the team, you know, you have McColl in place first. So you have your person who's doing the framing device, at least from the writing perspective. But how do you assemble the team after that? And Nicole, once that team is assembled, how do you start to craft the framing device? Is it writing your story and just letting it segue? Is it looking at everybody's stories and then figuring out how it all fits together? Talk me through the process.
Well, the one thing I'll say about the general process, which I think Jamie will agree, is that because in my former life I was an editor and I've overseen a lot of anthologies of my own, is that when I give her my pitch, there's usually a lot of, so depending on what we end up getting or what you decide on, she could be watching this movie, she could be watching this movie. And I'll often give a couple of different options because I want to just sort of leave it open. So that's what I try to do, but I'll let Jamie speak more about her organizational process. But I just try to keep it really flexible, like if A, then B, so that like we're not painted in, and I like to be able to turn on a dime if we need to.
Yeah, and in my case, I had received pitches from the other writers, Casey Gilley and Sam Maggs. Some of them were for other books entirely, but they had stories that just made much more sense to work in this anthology. So once I sort of got them together, I always try to push everyone a little bit to explore more of the expanded cast, because, you know, immediately a lot of people are going to hit the four, you know, Archie, Jughead, Betty, Veronica. Mm-hmm. And we have just such a huge library of characters. It's always cool to be like, all right, but what if you dig more into our cast? Who else could do it? And then sometimes by doing that, it just opens up the possibilities for stories even more, because, you know, there's something about a certain character that lends itself to a more interesting plot point. So in this one, we used Melody from Josie and the Pussycats, which I think was what Sam had from the beginning. And I was like, perfect. And then Brigitte Riley, who is a character that's really only ever appeared in like a lot of our classic books. She's known for being a singer. She hasn't had a lot of time in the sun. So this was a really cool way to sort of reinforce her personality and give her a little more depth. And then in the case of this one, I actually had all three writers sort of get together and work sort of things out themselves to be like, okay, I'm going to be using this character. This is what's going to take place. So Nicole could look at that and say like, all right, so that would make sense for Betty to be watching this movie. And then maybe we could pick up this thread that's mentioned in this story and include it in the framework. And everybody just kind of jived really well together and it came out really well.
I mean, I know you're saying you have some of the characters already. We have a comment here on Facebook from Mary Poopoo says, Josie and the Pussycats feels untapped for horror. Could we potentially be seeing more of Josie and the Pussycats in these chilling adventures, anthologies or otherwise?
I mean, pretty much every character is on the table for these. That's what's great. That's what we love about having the different stories, is it really gives us a chance to explore as many characters as we want to.
Hmm. Well, go ahead.
One question about the framing device, Nicole. I feel like the way it's laid out, I was surprised by in a good way. It almost has like horror movie style cuts, like in and out of the story. Like it's a real jump, and you don't usually see that in comics anthologies because there's a little separation even from the framing device. But this, I think played really into the genre. Was that a purposeful choice? And how did that come about?
Yes, I do. Yes, I will say that the end, I don't want to be spoilery, but the most dramatic of the cuts was actually Jamie's edit, and it was fantastic. And I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. So that is obviously a testament to what a good collaboration can do, because I, you know, even my, first of all, any writer like is just, in my experience, most writers are mired by self-doubt and spend most of their time, you know, second guessing. But even when I am feeling really confident about something, I love, you know, when I'm working with an editor and it comes back and it's like 12 times better than I even imagined because of like such a fantastic suggestion if you're referring to what I think you're referring to, then I think those moments were mostly influenced by Jamie, but it was intentional and I was glad that she was able to draw that out. And then, you know, for me, I don't get to see the other scripts until the end. And I, even when I see the pitches, which this time around, I didn't see the pitches until later on in the process, with some of the other anthologies, I saw them earlier on, but, it's a surprise when everything comes eventually in for me to, you know, tie it all together. And it's such a delight what you were saying about the variation in the different genres and the writing style when we did Holiday Magic and it was past, present, and future. And each one had such a unique voice. I mean, it was truly so charming, like, to read each one with its very, very distinct voice and humor. So that's just been really enjoyable for me for so many reasons, and really made me very nostalgic for my days of like working with writers directly. So as many as you want, I'm happy to do that. So
excellent. Cool. Jamie, I wanted to ask you a general question to contradict what Justin said earlier. I have been loving these one shots and I think they're great, but there is a part of me that misses the ongoing continuity Archie Comics books. I know we're still getting the classic style Archie comic books, and we are getting these one shots, which are very fun. But are we going to see that at any point in the future? Are we going to see a return to monthly ongoings?
I mean, it all depends on, you know, how things do, how the marketplace is. You know, we'll probably dip our toes more into minis at some point before we return to ongoing. But you know what? We also have such an amazing ongoing project happening over at Webtoon with our Big Ethel Energy series. Yeah. So that's sort of filling a really nice void for anybody who's looking for that really long form ongoing storytelling, too.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about one in particular, not to put you on the spot, but we were friends with James the Third and loved
him. Yeah.
Bob Phantom was
James
awesome.
Is wonderful.
I was
so fun.
I love that one shot. I was so bummed it was only a one shot. Is there any chance we could see more of Bob Phantom in particular?
I mean, anything can happen. That was one that really took us by surprise because Bob Phantom is not a character.
No, what?
And even just by name alone, it's one that most people would be like, all right, that's interesting. And he is so fantastic, and he just knocked that one out of the park. I was so shocked when he turned in the script because I was like, you did it. You really really made this Bob Phantom character something that like is just so interesting and humorous in aspects and a lot of fun. So I won't say no to anything, but I will say I absolutely would love to work with James again soon, too. Cool.
We got a good crossover question here from YouTube. I'm going to bring in this is from Ramsey Hassan. Which Archie character would you give a Morgan Le Fay's magic necklace to?
Ooh.
Oh, God.
Cheryl.
Yeah. I mean,
wow, Pete coming strong with an answer.
Yeah.
Any other answers or just Cheryl? Because that's the correct answer, I think.
Yeah, I think that's
hard to argue.
So
it's a good answer.
She probably already has it. Let's be honest. What are we giving it to her? She'd be giving it to someone else after a while.
Well, listen, I want to ask you something else off of the Archie comic books, but we're rapidly coming up on the final season of Riverdale, a month away as of this taping. What are you looking forward to? Bacall, Jamie, I know beyond anything, you're still also fans of the show. Bacall, you've written a ton about it. I know we've talked about it and DM'd about like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. What are you anticipating with the final season of the series?
I cannot offer any predictions. It's impossible, honestly. I'm looking forward to having, I mean, I'm sad that it's ending because I mean, for many reasons, I enjoy watching it, obviously, as a fan, and also the show and the process of, like, meeting the Archie team and becoming a writer for Archie has just been, like, such a wonderful dream come true. So just, like, I'm sentimental about the fact that the TV show that opened that door for me is coming to an end. So that's all, you know, very sunrise, sunset. But I think it'll be fun to have the complete series to go back and like watch start to finish. I think it's one of those that the week to week, the gap makes it harder. I mean, obviously the timeline is a little bit fuzzy in the first place, but especially with like the hiatuses and things like that, it will be nice to go back and like watch it from start to finish and sort of get a more holistic sense of it.
Wow.
Yeah. And Jamie, what about you? What are you looking forward to with the final season?
Yeah, I was going to say, so I have no like insider knowledge on it. So I too have no clue, you know, what possibly could happen to like cap it all off. And, you know, gosh, there's so many things. I hope the bear comes back.
That's what I was going to say is I feel like it's the kind of show where they're going to be like, we're going to hit every we're gonna have to rewatch it.
Bear's gonna come back and finish the job.
Oh my God, that's the final scene, I think.
I mean,
Bear shows up right to black Soprano style.
Oh. The bears eating at an Italian restaurant.
Yeah, I feel like there's a certain level of that would be horrible, but there's also a certain level because it's Riverdale. People would be like, yeah, that makes sense. That tracks. We're good. Jamie, from a business perspective, though, is Archie planning anything to celebrate this final season of Riverdale, or is it just going to be business as usual?
I'm not sure. I know we always do a ton of fun stuff, especially in conjunction with each episode on social media. We've been doing live tweets for everyone, so I can only imagine that final episode is going to be a lot of fun. But we don't have anything super planned. On my side of the world, I'm so focused on the publishing aspect of it, so like that's, you know, kind of a different world for me, but it'll be fun to see.
Yeah. So Betty the Final Girl is on stands now. What is next? What is the next chilling adventures thing? Jamie and Nicole, what's next for you? What else can people be looking for?
So the next chilling adventures one shot is Pop's Chocolate Shop of Horrors, which is on sale next month. That's, you know, kind of what it sounds like. It's a lot of just creepy stories all surrounding Pop's Chocolate Shop. Another thing that was kind of touched on a little bit in Riverdale, we've had some moments where there were some, yeah,
some creepy moments happen.
Yeah,
this one takes it not just creepy, really, really gory and very, very far into the horror genre. So that's the one next month. And then following is The Cult of That Wilkin Boy, which is a 20-page one-shot, which gets to the dark side of fame and superstardom. Those are the next two upcoming ones.
Awesome. And Nicole, what about you? What else is coming out from you other than Betty the Final Girl?
I have like thousands of pop culture picture books coming out because apparently that's I'm your go-to girl for those things these days, which are very fun and also apparently like appropriately bite-sized for someone with post-pandemic brain. So that has been a shocking, an unexpected new genre. I mean, I've worked on picture books before, but that was sort of a, I didn't expect that, and I'm enjoying it a lot. So I can't reveal any of the names yet because they're still, until they're announced, it's all. But I think Seinfeld was just recently announced a couple of months ago. So there's going to be this Seinfeld picture book that is so cute. Oh, cool. It's called The Day of Nothing. And they've got to see the baby. So there's spend the whole day like racing across the city, all kinds of inside jokes, trying to get to the baby, to see the baby. It's not the ugly baby. I mean, it is, but it's, we don't discuss
you don't discuss how ugly the baby is.
Yeah, we never see
you don't
the baby
see the baby. You don't see the
it
baby.
Is not known as ugly in the book.
Well, that's like you don't show the monster, then the monster's in your mind.
Exactly.
Just like the baby.
So there's that. And then there's some other ones that I guess are still under NDA. And then there's a middle grade graphic novel that I'm excited about that has also been taking up a lot of my time and attention. So, and hopefully some more Archie in the future, although nothing has been confirmed yet, but they're always, whenever I get an email from Jamie, I'm like, ooh. When I see the name in my inbox, I drop everything. So.
Well, Nicole, Jamie, thank you so much for coming on. Again, the book is super fun. It's great. Really looking forward to Pop's Chocolate Shop of Horrors. And Nicole, everything coming out from you. Thanks so much for coming on. It was great seeing both of you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Great to have you both.
All right. There we go. That is, once again, Betty the Final Girl. It is
out from it's great.
Archie Comics. Pete, you are a Betty fan. How'd you feel about the book? Be honest.
Oh, I was super, super impressed with it. Yeah, I thought they did a great job, and I liked the different tales. You know, so there was something for everybody in there.
And we won't talk about the reveal, but great. It's rare when a comic really crushes the ending.
Plus, it's very pro listening to podcasts, so that helps us out. So that's great.
There you go.
Yeah, definitely. I think that
definitely feeds back directly into what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. I'm about to finish my Dark Betty and become Dark Justin. So watch out for that as we go forward.
It's a mad world, man. It's a mad world. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. All right, we are going to go to our next section, which is my favorite section because you make it up. It is your audience questions. And
not drinking today?
What?
You're not drinking today?
Hold on, I'm saying things. All you got to do is drop a question over on YouTube or Facebook or in the Q&A section on Crowdcast, and we will get to it here. But before we get to what we are drinking, we have a sponsor for this week's episode that I wanted to talk about. This week's show is sponsored by our good friend, Juan Espinoza, man behind Bearded Man Comics. The goal of the company is to create stories showcasing Hispanic cultures. And they've got two great titles, Adventures of a System Admin and Mythology Stories. If you're looking for a fun book about hacking into computers that comes from an actual place of knowledge, definitely check out all six issues of Adventures of a System Admin. And you can also check out Mythology Stories, which is part of a successful Kickstarter campaign that was highlighted as a project we love by the platform. Comics are available in all major digital platforms such as Amazon, Apple Books, Comic Central, and Library Pass. You can also find the physical copies and a great amount of merchandise at the main website, beardedmancomics.com.
Plus we've had them on the show, so you can go back and listen to that show as well if you're looking for more.
Exactly.
Yeah. A couple times.
Yeah.
Who isn't looking for more? I'm looking for more information on what everybody's drinking this evening. I'm still having this delicious dark Betty cocktail, which is very good. And Justin, you just finished yours.
Pete, I finished mine, but I'm going to go to the fridge, which is right here. So just
fridge manager.
What are you drinking?
Oh, I'm drinking Pony Boy. You got to stay golden. You know what I mean?
Wow. Great point. I'm going to dip into Genesee Springbok.
A little Genesee, baby.
When you go to Wegmans in Brooklyn, there's not a lot of beer where the 12-pack costs less than $12. But this is one of them. Shouts to Jenny. The beer that you drink when you find beer in the woods.
All right, we got a couple of questions here, so why don't we jump into it? This one is from Scheukler over on YouTube. Thank you for specifying it's for audience questions for AQ. What's another non-Archie property that you'd like to see do that kind of turn towards anthology horror?
Ooh,
good question.
Interesting.
Great question.
My Little Pony.
Nice.
Good call.
Yeah. Great. Have you been watching?
Yeah, you came up with that very quickly, Peter.
I know, like that was off the dome. That was it.
Well, I was just trying to think of something that's not horror, and the first thing that popped in was My Little Pony.
I don't know if you've watched much MLP lately, but it gets a little horror. There's
really
terrifying stuff. Yeah.
I didn't know it was still going or was a cartoon.
It's going in my house. If you pop by, we'll sit down and
meet. Sorry, were you saying My Little Pony based on the toys from 30 to 40 years ago? That's what they should do? You didn't know there was a cartoon or anything?
Did not know that there was.
Oh, boy, I have a lot of stuff to fill you in on.
No, cool.
There's a whole thing going on there with bronies and other stuff.
Nicole in our chat is responding to what we're talking about, saying that, yes, MLP gets dark, and it definitely so Pete, well, they are ahead of you in the genre there.
I'll throw out to bounce off of what Pete is saying. I feel like IDW in particular has all of these licensed properties. They could do a good job with taking them some of horror theme, like Transformers do a Christine style thing with a car or something like that. That'd be fun.
Isn't that what the Transformers, that's just what the Decepticons are?
I don't know. Do you ever think about how, like, there's a human inside of a Transformer? They're going to get ripped to shreds when that Transformer transforms, right?
Well, you know? That's why I feel like there shouldn't be much driving involved when you're hanging out with the Transformers. I know it's natural.
I think it's rude to drive if you're in a Transformer. You know what I mean? You got to just like let them do their thing. You know what I mean?
Well, who's, yeah, who's, but I don't know. How do you feel with like a horse?
That's a good question. What?
Like, isn't a Transformer like
when you're horse? When you're inside of a horse? when you're inside of a horse,
you yeah. How do you drive a horse? You get inside it, right? Like a,
I don't know,
like
what's
a
happening.
Horrifying car. No, yeah. I get what I'm saying is like you're saying the Transformers aren't used to humans. I mean, they were grown to be cars. Like, I feel like it's sort of like, well,
you're an alien race that came down here and then scanned cars as a way to blend in. All right, so
is that what they did? What were they before? They were just.
Robots.
Pete, yeah. If you went to another planet, would you like scan a horse and become a horse?
You're goddamn right. I would scan. You know, I'd be a unicorn. You know what I mean? Keep it.
Unicorn. That's what style. You would transform. Wow, you're really hitting that.
You're laser focused, man.
I mean, if I'm picking almost an like animal to transform, I'm turtle. Yeah, I'm going straight turtle.
You want to be a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Pete, I really hope your cutie mark comes in soon. Fingers crossed. We'll see what happens.
But let me just go down on this. I'm not as familiar with Transformers mythology. You're saying they were in space and they were like, you know what? We'll hide as cars. No, the place where everyone interacts.
They were on Cybertron, dude. Have you even watched the show? They were on Cybertron. There was a war that broke out. You know, they tried to escape. They crash landed on Earth, and then they were like, okay, we got to blend in. They started scanning cars and transforming the cars.
Feels like, I mean, if they're going to be sensitive about letting humans drive, that's a bad choice.
Mm-hmm. Does it work the same way with the Beast Wars stuff? Like when Optimus Prime scans a gorilla, does somebody ride inside of him still?
Oh, my God. You are just...
I guess technically a gorilla should be riding with... It should be a corresponding animal. For the better disguise.
A smaller gorilla inside of the gorilla, is that what you're saying?
Because let me tell you, if you want to be a robot in disguise, I would choose human. Hmm. I would go with a transform into a human.
Interesting.
That's why you're the king of the Transformers.
Fast, you know what I mean? You can't go fast. Yeah, cars.
I don't know.
Fast.
All that transforming takes
Do you
a
think that was
time.
The first pitch at Hasbro where they were like, I've got this idea. It's Transformers. They're robots in space and they come down and to hide, they become humans.
I have a strong feeling
you can
that
fold
they
them
designed...
until they become regular human figures.
I have a feeling the mythology came after they had the Transformers.
Oh,
yeah, the toy came first, bro.
Before they were like, we
got another tie-in question here. This is from Ben the Border Collie. Who would be your final girl if you were writing in a DC and or Marvel setting?
Ooh,
great question. I have two answers. Okay. My first was Mary Jane.
Sable.
Exactly
what I was you're going to say.
No,
Sable.
No, Mary Jane.
No, I said Mary Jane. Mary Jane is the like class. Like, and I honestly, we haven't seen a lot of.
Wait, pre making a deal with the devil, Mary Jane, or
maybe the deal with the devil's involved. But boo. I think she's a great option. But let me also throw out, go the opposite way, Power Girl. You don't. The final girl is often running. Hiding, like, scared. What about Power Girl, who's sort of like the opposite of a final girl, finding a way to weave the story that way would be very fun.
I like that. I don't know why this came to mind. I feel like this is almost wrong, but Renee Montoya as the Question, I feel like she kind of ends up in those situations anyway, so there might be something there, potentially.
Storm and Wonder Woman.
Oh, I thought you were going to say some sort of My Little Pony character, potentially.
Yeah.
No. Storm and Wonder Woman.
And Wonder Woman, both?
No explanation.
No explanation needed. They're definitely final material.
You just want that. Those you want them to be the final comics you read.
All right. Fair enough. We got this from Ramsey Hassan. After reading The Brilliant Magic Necklace, do you think that eroticism is still an unexplored genre in comics? Would you like more exploration of it? Great question. And for that, we're going to go to Pete first. Pete,
oh, yeah. This is great. You know? Hey, you know, well, it's all about what the writer wants to explore, what speaks to them, you know? So I don't think it's unexplored. I definitely wouldn't say that ever. yeah, I mean, you know, it's all about the story that a writer wants to put out there or artist wants to collab on and put out there, you know? Whatever winds your watch, whatever gets you going. So, you know.
Whatever winds your watch, the most erotic way to say that.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, I'm not allowed in watch stores anymore because hubba hubba.
There's a lot of reasons you're not allowed.
I believe that. Let me say, I think there should be more, but it's a hard eroticism in a real way, like that is actually erotic, I think is really hard to do. And that's why I feel like the Magic Necklace did such a great job of actually doing that. But real eroticism is very hard to do. And yes, I would like to see more of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, not to get too big about this, but there's been this ongoing debate that cropped up again recently about sex scenes in movies and TV shows. Yes. I think digging into it, it very specifically came from some bad actors who were trying to push a, like, we should censor a lot of stuff sort of argument that they're eventually getting towards. But it did kick off a lot of discussion about it, about should there be sex scenes in movie TV shows? Do we need them? Are they important? I would say it's the same thing with comics that it is with literally anything. Is it motivated? Like, are you doing it just to throw it in there to titillate? It's the same thing as like action scenes, you know, where frankly, I know Pete is not going to like this, but there's a lot of comics we read.
Talking about something different. Don't come for me.
But I really like legitimately think it's the same way where we've been reading enough comics at this point. We've been doing the show for over 15 years, read thousands, millions of comics, something like that. I don't even know at this point.
Never maybe, count. Maybe never millions. Count how many.
But there can be cool fight scenes, but ultimately just seeing it feels like a wash if it's just now we fight and now we stop fighting and now we're friends and now we're going to go fight the supervillain. It's the same thing with a sex scene. Like it happens far less in comics, but in TV or movies, it was like we're having a sex scene because now is the point when we have a sex scene versus it doing something to the characters and right. pushing them some way emotionally. That's how I want to see it. And comics, I don't know. The way comics is built as an industry doesn't necessarily lend itself to that as frequently in mainstream comics as it potentially could.
I got you, Alex. Replace all fight scenes with sex scenes.
That's what I'm cool. saying.
But let me throw in there.
I'm
think
the best there is at what I do.
Oh, stop.
Ain't very pretty.
I think that the sex scenes that I feel like that debate was talking about, the bulk of sex scenes in movies, are written by people who are much more focused on maybe the action scenes. Like mm-hmm. 80s action movies and sex scenes, I wouldn't argue they're really focused on eroticism as an art form. So I think it is about cultivating that as the goal to write a scene that is as important to the development of the characters and the story of the movie or TV show or comic as the rest of it.
There you go. I think we solved it, everybody. And I think we had one more question here. Maybe I missed it.
We have a lot of platforms.
It is a lot of platforms, so I'm not sure. So I guess that's actually it for your audience questions. Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop, whoop. And now we are going to move to our next section, which is trivia. Man, I gotta figure out the sound effect.
The pickup on that was at a strange part, and I appreciate it.
Definitely was. I don't know how it works yet. Oh, there we go. Okay, we are going to go to trivia. For that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Long John Silver for some reason, or Midtown Comics, because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show, and you would want comics probably, you know, I mean, comics
or fish fun. You might want comics or fish.
Exactly. We gotta move these fish gift cards, that's for sure.
We'll look back and realize, wow, I can't believe we became a fish reviewing podcast.
I'm looking forward to us talking about some bass, you know what I mean, like
mm-hmm.
yeah, nice, you know, bass.
We have a trivia contestant today that I'm going to bring into the stream. It is Dr. Scheuchler.
Hey, Doc!
Wow, what's going on here?
You're muted, buddy.
Head of experimental medicine.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, I've just come out of surgery, but I mean, humans have two livers, right?
Oh boy,
Doc, I don't know where you went to school, but go back.
Pete, you want to take it away with some trivia?
Sure. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Richard Belzer, R.I.P.
Oh,
please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Ready, Doc? Question number one. How many characters are on the cover of the Fantastic Four number 700 issue out this May? Is it A, 4, B, 700, or C, Robert LaLoggia?
I'm going to lean toward B.
You are good at leaning, sir. Congratulations. You are correct. That's right. There's going to be 700 characters on that Fantastic Four cover. It should be fun to see them all. All right. Question number two. In May, what number will Batman hit? Is it A, 900, B, 800, or C, Mark Margolis? So it's either A, because it's more impressive, or is it B?
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say A.
You are correct. 900 is where Batman will be at this May. All right, here we go. Last question. What is coming back to comics at Dark Horse? Is it A, Murder, Inc., B, Kree Mention, or C, Lee Benton?
Wow. It's a real stunner. Also, really I didn't see a lot of hints. Didn't see a lot of hints there.
Well, only one of them is an actual thing, and that would be Murder, Inc.
So, I'm going to go with the Murder, Inc.
Yeah, you are correct.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's wow. Cool. Wow.
Which is what I like to have in my colorful murder pen.
Okay. Nice. Wow, look at you bringing it all together.
Call back.
Let me throw out a question from Stray Bullies over here. Is the stethoscope a puppet? And I think we can officially say, because you usually come on with puppets.
Usually we see puppets. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we want to get a second opinion, I could bring on my colleague, Dr. Kong.
Oh, boy.
Nice. Who's
it? Donkey Kong. It's a Donkey Kong puppet, if you're listening.
Alex, really shaking his head at this. Really and not.
I love it. Thank you. Kevin, are you going to take a gift card to Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's? What's your choice?
Great I'm going to go with Midtown Comics.
All right.
Oh, Kevin, I guess you hate fish Kevin, and piracy.
Okay. Well, shoot us an email and we'll get that off to you. And what is the secret movie that Pete was intimating with his...
With the bells.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It's not coming to me tonight.
Oh, interesting. I got you. It's because you're so in character.
Yeah, exactly. He's focused on the surgery.
1983 hit Scarface.
Wow.
Wow.
I forgot Belzer was in that.
Oh, yeah,
It's strange to hear you say a real movie title. A movie that people have seen and heard of.
Kevin, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations.
Great to see you, Kev.
All right. As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop.
Whoop, whoop. What are you guys looking forward to that is coming out, Pete?
Besides Betty the Final Girl, which I very much enjoyed.
Last week. That was last
Already
week.
Already out.
Well, yep. I'm still giving it a shout out if you don't fucking mind, you assholes.
Oh my gosh, calm down.
Jesus, okay.
I don't mind.
as well as Cosmic Ghost Rider number one. Woo!
Wow.
Great. Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
You were going to say so many more words than that.
Nope.
There's one obvious and one maybe less obvious. I got to give it up for Human Target number 12 coming out this week. I mean, talk about a comic.
That's the only reason you came back was so you could talk about this issue.
Well, you know what? And like you guys talked about a lot of comics in the last couple weeks, but there's one that I wanted to mention. The Clayface, One Bad Day.
Oh my God.
Oh,
dude, we already talked about it.
I know you did, but I didn't. And I just want to say shouts to that comic. It's by Jackson and Lansing, a team we've loved on Captain America. And that Clayface comic is so good. And it hit me so hard because it's about like theatrical, about being an actor. It's about like,
you know, what would be great is if you were on the show, you could talk about it.
Give me a break. Give me a break. Yeah. Oh, okay. That'll hassle you next time you have to like go ride a crab somewhere or whatever.
All right.
Anyway, human target number 12, bringing the series to a close. What a great run this has been. Definitely
save
this,
some for the stack, bro.
No, I will not. I'm going to only review the books you guys already talked about in the stack. But the other one I wanted to say and shout out was, of course, I forgot it because I was talking about this other stuff. And it was... Action Comics 1052.
All right,
yeah.
There we go.
Really enjoy.
Really under the radar character, Superbad.
Well, but I feel like this hasn't gotten as much hype. The new Super Family, mm-hmm. And the way that is, it's even tighter than the Bat Family has been of late, which we really do see a lot of.
How do you think it compares with the Shazamily?
Well, we also have that to talk about. I have plenty to say about the Shazamly, which I won't say right now. But I do think this family, the way that this Superman book is being written by Philip Kennedy Johnson and the backups are also excellent, is really exciting. It feels like a real new chapter in the Superman story and is going in a fun place.
Cool. A couple of ones that I want to mention. I want to give a shout out to Phantom Road from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel L. H. Walta. And this is a wild new post-apocalyptic zombie book. I don't know, but I thought I was kind of blown away by that. And the other one, Murder World Game Over from Marvel. I've really been enjoying that crossover. It's a bunch of number ones where Arcade has been putting these people in a Squid Game kind of competition through their paces. Very fun. Excited to see how that wraps up. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people you want to thank. We want to thank Claire Napier for coming on. Be sure to check out the Magic Necklace on Zoop right now. Again, as of this taping, 16 days left. It's very cool. Also, Nicole Osto and Jamie Rotante coming on, talking about Archie Comics, Betty the Final Girl. Awesome book. Definitely check that out, as well as all of the other things they mentioned. Next week on the show, we are going to have a bunch of other guests. Here we go. Ben Goldsmith is going to be here to talk about Seance Room and his crossover with Hackslash. Also, Steve Horton is going to be here to talk about another Zoop book, Bowie, Stardust, Ray Guns, and Moon Age Daydreams. Yes. And Laurie Foster is going to be here to talk about Cthulhu is Hard to Spell.
Yeah. True. 100%.
It is true. If you want to support our show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. You can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram or TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
CTHULHU, good night.
Oh, yeah.